I'm going to stand for the first part, and then these four women to my right, we just met, but now we know each other a lot better, having just sat a few inches apart. I'm so thrilled to be here today. As was mentioned, I oversee a platform at Forbes Media called Forbes Woman, dedicated to women in business and leadership. And this conference and all of you here today are testaments to why I felt so passionate about starting this platform. And the topic of impact and change is something so critical to the conversations that we have each day at Forbes Woman, and also to the conversations that all of you have within your respective communities. The goal for today is to better understand how all of us and each of us in this room can have greater impact on the world around us. Sometimes I often talk to women who feel like it's intimidating that you have to have meaningful impact on the world and you have to do it all at once. But having impact is far more profound and far more simple than I think people realize. There's so much opportunity, and that's why I'm thrilled to have the women to my right today. The women, who I'll ask them to introduce themselves, and I'll be curious what they say versus their bio, because I'm sure they're all very humble, so don't be humble. But the reason why this panel is so exciting is that these women are not only change agents in a multitude of spheres, but also they can provide an opportunity to serve as inspirations and mentors for us to take away actionable items and some ways that we can rethink how all of us can impact in our respective communities. I'm going to actually pull this back in because the cord's not long enough. This is what happens when you try and demo stuff when you're actually talking. Carol, I'm going to start with you. You have been called an ambassador of both local and global communities. And in reading more about you, actually, you know what, I'm gonna let you do the introduction first. So why don't we start in the alphabetical order?
Great. Thank you so much, excuse me, Moira. And thank you for hosting this panel, which is clearly near and dear to all of us here and obviously to all of you. It's important, first of all, for you to know that each of us in our own spheres makes change. And I think the question today is, how do we do it? The change I have chosen to make is through civic engagement and government engagement. And so that's my sphere. And so as a result, I have the good fortune of being the Senior Vice President of Corporate Responsibility and Brand Initiatives for John Hancock. That's how I choose to make change in the corporate arena. But then again, I'm also very passionate about our political arena and see how much change is made through our political arena. And so as such, I'm actively engaged in local, state, and national politics. I had the good fortune of helping to be one of the founding directors, of Obama for America here in Massachusetts when he had 10% name recognition. So I didn't know how far he would go, but I was going to go as far as that train took us. And look where it took us. So as a result of that passion and that need to be engaged in change, the president appointed me as his U.S. representative to the United Nations General Assembly last year. And it has been a huge ride.
Hi, my name is Kyla LaPierre, and I'm a Senior Vice President at State Street Bank. I like to think I champion change just for bringing together women in various regions. I just returned from a two-year stint in London, and just being back a month now and seeing all of you in this room is eye-opening because we really need to do that overseas. We don't have the presence that we have over here, and we really need to expand that space. So just being able to talk to you all about the global experience that I've had and open your minds and hearts to that is why I'm here today.
Thank you. I'm Jane Swift, and my passion has always been public education excellence. It is why I got involved in politics, and it's why today I'm thrilled to serve as the CEO of an innovative education technology company called Middlebury Interactive Languages. We deliver online world language learning and cultural competency to students in kindergarten through 12th grade through summer programs as well as an online format. You may also remember me because a very long time ago, I was a very pregnant governor. You will probably be shocked and surprised to know that I now have a teenager living in my house. Worse yet, it's a teenage girl. And she has two younger sisters who take their cues from her. But I actually think that you can have a very rich and rewarding life if you choose to impact change at both the local as well as a corporate, political, national, or state level. Some of my greatest joy comes from the impact I have, whether it's being a complete maniac on the sidelines of the field hockey tournaments that my girls are playing in, or the time I spent a few years ago as a Girl Scout leader. I really believe there are multiple ways to impact issues that you care about.
Good morning, ladies. I'm Maria Ibrahimji, and I'm the director and executive editorial producer for the interview department for CNN Worldwide, based at our headquarters in Atlanta. I come at change from, I guess, the perspective of messaging. I think that I work for one of the largest and most important news organizations in the world, and while oftentimes we are criticized for our messaging on the air, I do believe I'm in one of the most critical arenas to impact change. I've been involved and had the fortune of being involved in some really rewarding projects, namely CNN Heroes, which, by the way, airs live this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, please tune in. And our Freedom Project for CNN International, which launched earlier this year, which I'm so proud, has really impacted and changed governments to change their policies in terms of sex and human trafficking around the world. I was fortunate enough to bring Demi Moore to this project and have her go to Nepal and really look at this issue firsthand with our CNN Hero of the Year. So I've really been able to impact change in the media. In my personal life, I realized that I am so very passionate about the faith and my faith identity that I co-wrote a book earlier this year called I Speak for Myself, American Women on Being Muslim. It's a collection of essays written by 40 Muslim women under the age of 40, just like me, who were born and raised here and who really believe that the stereotyping of our faith has to stop. And so I chose to bring all these women together and do what I do best, which is book and produce interviews. And so these women wrote their own narratives. And this book is completely antithetical to what I've done in my career, which is tell other people's stories. We've allowed other women to share their stories. So I think this is a different way of impacting change. And I'll speak to that, I guess, throughout the course of this panel, owning your own narrative.
Well, thank you so much for those introductions, because they're very inspiring to all of us. And I think, Governor Swift, you touched on a great point in terms of you can have impact being a maniac on a soccer field. Carol, I'll start with you, because you also talked about a clear mission and a sense of purpose. And you've grown up having a sense of mission in the civic space, cultural space, and the like. A lot of us, and I think many of us, struggle with what's our sense of purpose. What are we here to do? And sometimes it's a lot of pressure that we put on ourselves. If we don't know it early on, if we don't have that you know, aha moment or the experiences to give us that sense of purpose, what advice would you give to other women to really take a step back and see the ways in which they can have impact on the world around them?
I think that's a great question because, first of all, we don't know it all. And I want to share something very personal. While I'm very clear about what my path, my purpose is, I didn't know the specifics. And so as I've aged, I've become even more and more spiritual. And so it makes me realize there is so much that I don't know. And so for years, I have been saying, Lord, what am I called to do? And so that has helped me to constantly keep in front of me that question. And the answers come in all sorts of different ways. But because you raise that question throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the months and years, that's something that becomes central to you. And I know now, because that question was raised, I know now that I am personally called to help develop the next generation. And it's because I am a child of the civil rights movement. And because so many others died so that I could sit here, what is my responsibility? And so I'm called to take whatever was given to my generation and make sure that we pass that on and more to the next generation. And it's because I kept asking that question until it finally came.
By asking that question, and again, I think it's really important to know and very helpful to know that you have to be rigorous and really diligent and persistent about asking yourself that question. I want to throw it over to you, Maria, because you wrote this incredible book where you brought together the stories of 40 Muslim American women. And you've talked a lot about this being one of your passions and one of your missions. So when we talk about passion and mission, how do we most effectively articulate that and take the next step? And I was so interested because you, through writing this book, you talked about the fact that you chose people's stories so that it sounded like you were talking to your next door neighbor. In order to impact change and to have influence, what's the power of storytelling and each of our experiences, and do we need to be leading with that more?
Yeah, to clarify, the 40 women in the book include me. Each woman wrote their own essay. This is why it's completely antithetical to what I do in my day-to-day work, which is we tell other people's stories. So my story is included in it, and I will tell you that was the first time in my entire life I've sat down and actually written about myself, aside from the essay that I submitted to get into college. It was the first time I really took a look at my faith journey, my identity, and it was daunting. It's one thing to produce interviews with newsmakers from around the world, but to turn the table on yourself and really inwardly focus on who you are and why you're here. And we all ask this question of ourselves at any point in our lives, and for some it happens early, for some it happens midlife, but it's the question of who am I? You know, why am I here? What do I want out of my life? And for me that question came actually 2 or 3 years after I left college. But storytelling is so important, and I think, you know, being in the media, what I've really realized as I speak to women and men about what it is I do is that messaging and knowing what your narrative is so important. If I were to walk up to any one of you today and ask you, you know, what's your elevator pitch? What in 1 minute can you tell me who you are? How many of you in this room can actually confidently answer that question? How many of you know exactly what that answer is? So I see some hands. So this is something you have to really think about. I mean, earlier this summer, I actually spent my summer completely away from CNN. I was working with Turner Sports. I know nothing about sports. I was doing brand strategy and marketing, something I knew nothing about. I've spent 12 years doing news and journalism. And one of the most important and critical things I learned there is that if you don't know the message, no one else is going to know it for you. You can't expect through osmosis that everyone in this room is going to understand and appreciate you just because you're sitting up here on this stage. So you have to sort of know who you are, and storytelling is so important in that. And each of you in this room has a story, and you don't need me in the media, and my bosses at CNN are going to love me for saying this. You don't need CNN to promote your story. The wonderful thing that's happening right now is this convergence of media and social media and journalism and social media. And I think now more than ever before, people own their own news. They don't need CNN. You don't need to tune into the nightly news at 6 o'clock to know what happened today. You already knew. You knew it 6 hours ago. So you have the ability through this social media space to really define and promote who you are. So whether it's 140 characters or a 2-minute soundbite, know what that message is.
That's a really interesting point that you made. And again, just the access to new platforms that we have. Never before have there been more opportunities for women to have influence and to have voices in unconventional ways, untraditional ways. One of the more traditional ways to be a change agent is in our professional lives, in our corporations, in our businesses that we work with. And sometimes when you work in a larger company or a corporation, the ability to be a change agent is sometimes harder than you think. And often the ability to be a change agent is right in front of you. Colleagues to your left, to your right, your team, the people above you. Kyla, you had talked about your passion for mentoring other women. How have you been able to translate that both in a larger company but also on a personal level?
So State Street has 27,000 employees. In order to get anything done there, it takes a long time. The first thing that I would recommend to everybody is integrity and trust. That's the only way someone is going to have your back and you're going to have others. If you don't have open communication and honesty with your staff and your peers, you're never going to get anything done. So no matter if it's here in the United States or over in London or Asia or wherever it is, you have to talk openly to people as if you want them to be your best friend for life. You need to have a clear vision. Articulate what that is from the get-go. Allow them to ask questions and be open-minded when they give you feedback. It may not always be your way. And listen. Listen all the time. We always think that we may do a great job, or, you know, so-and-so said this. But perception is very important. You have to open your mind to what other people think of you and the way you come across and be willing to change it if it's negative.
Each of you talked about the critical qualities of being authentic and having integrity and just the power of what that can do as a leader. And leadership doesn't necessarily mean power. Often leadership means the ability to influence. And oftentimes, whether we realize it or not, we can have influence in unexpected ways, or probably ways that we don't even think that we're changing and shaping people's lives. But Governor Swift, I wanted to talk to you about that concept of impact without necessarily choosing a specific issue to champion. You had talked about being a mother in political office and being the first woman in public office to have a child. And your two different election cycles, you were pregnant. And there was a lot of talk in the media about what does this mean for working women? What does it mean for working women? Can mothers be professionals, be successful? And there was a lot of debate, and I think it brought out just how political that topic is in the nation. And often women, individuals, represent a larger community without even necessarily trying to. How do we actually leverage what can sometimes be a drawback as an advantage?
So I think that being a working mother has required me to look internally and dig deep to do things that I'm passionate about. I want to be very clear. I try to be clear with my kids, although they probably know it better than most. Choosing work that you're passionate about that is also demanding and having young children is hard. I make choices every single day. I have not been home since 5 o'clock Monday morning. And when I leave here, this is a particularly bad week. My Catholic guilt requires me to tell you that. I'm not going home from here. I'm going to New York City for a board meeting. And I am very hopeful that I will be home in time to get my 13-year-old dressed for the 80s dance, which I'm an expert in that fashion. But I think a few things. First of all, when you are in a position, particularly if you're in political office, and one of the things I hope everyone here will consider is to run for political office, because, well, power isn't always required to make change. It helps. And having more women in positions of power is critical to solving all of the issues we care about and you care about. And a funny thing, if you don't run, you actually don't get elected. I hope you will run, but when you are in the public eye and someone else is telling your story, sometimes I felt like I had to prove that I could do the job, and actually it required me not to tell my story and not to talk a lot about my role as a mother at that particular point in time. I actually tried that route, and it didn't work out so well for me. And then when my twins were born, I got very good advice, and I didn't talk about it at all, which is why you are probably shocked that they're 10, because they have not been public, and I was not particularly forthcoming about details about their life. Having said that, when I left political office with a different megaphone, I do accept speaking engagements like this. I do talk all the time to young women about the challenges and the huge opportunities of being a working mother. It is not easy, but it emboldens me to be passionate and bold in the leadership opportunities that I take on, because I'm making a big sacrifice to be away from my kids this week. And so it may sometimes make me less patient than I should be with some of the niceties and requirements of corporate life. But I think it's so important to work on things you care about and that you're bold about. And for me, being a working mother, that's an imperative. It's not something I could just not choose to do and go punch a clock somewhere and be away from my kids.
You brought up an interesting point that you chose not to talk about it with the twins. And sometimes, in a larger sense, it speaks to the fact that sometimes your messaging has to be catered and to be formed in a way that is often most effective for the people that you're talking to. And this is something, it doesn't mean you can't be authentic, but you have to understand that in order to have impact, you can't change people's minds for them. You have to bring them along the way. I want to go back to you, Carol, because Governor Swift brought up a great point in terms of being passionate about what you do. And sometimes in our lives, we feel like it's a zero-sum game. If we're really good at our jobs, then we're sacrificing this. If we're great at being moms, we're sacrificing this and that. But there are ways to more effectively integrate your passions and your leadership, if you have a sense of purpose, across multiple spheres of your lives. And I read, and this is one thing that sort of stood out to me, I read that earlier this year with the Boston Marathon, you were speaking to a UN delegation about the power of sports and development. And you talked about the Boston Marathon and what an amazing way it is to raise funds for a particular cause. And you integrated the two, making it more seamless. Can you talk a little bit about how we all can do that in a better way, maybe in our own lives?
First of all, I think we all need to give Governor Jane Swift a round of applause. Um, She paved the way for so many of us, and I was there, and I don't know how you did it, but I just want to thank you for representing being a woman and a good mother and a good citizen to the entire Commonwealth and to our country. So just thank you for that, Governor. Thank you. Truly. And as I move to the question, I just want to tell you how much this means to me, because I had to make a choice. I made a choice not to have children so that I could do all that I could do for my passion. Now, that was at my stage. So you can imagine how I stand in awe of someone like Jane and someone like you who are able to do it all. So you who are mothers really deserve so much credit, because I don't know how you do it all. But one of the ways that I try to do the work, so to speak, is to integrate the spheres. We all have transferable skills, whether we work in corporate, government, media. We take those skills and we can integrate throughout these spheres. So at the UN, I was asked to speak at the podium of the UN and give a speech on the impact of sport and development in peace. So engaging in sport, and how does that help bring about peace, like the Olympics. And so when I had another follow-up session, I chose to share the work that we do here in Boston with the member states of the UN throughout the globe. And we learned that there are 500 marathons that occur throughout the globe. Now, Hancock is the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon. And as a result of sponsoring that marathon, we work with nonprofits. The sponsors, the corporate sponsors, work with nonprofits to give out bibs, to give out the numbers. And we've been able to help Massachusetts nonprofits raise $5.3 million for their causes. So I simply shared this information with countries. There is a new marathon in the Gaza Strip. But if you have 500 marathons, why not member state? Why not country? Why not work with the corporate sponsor to help raise money for causes in your country? So it was wonderful to take a learning from one sphere and pass it on to another. And if we don't do that, then the buck stops here and nobody else benefits. So what we did in Massachusetts, we're proud to say countries are now working to engage and raise monies on behalf of their nonprofit community.
Which is incredible. I won't be running in any of those marathons, especially the ones in very hot climates that you just mentioned. But I think that's a great testament to the power to be creative. So again, be creative and really assess the tools that you have that you may not think that you have. Part of those tools, Marie, you talked earlier about was social media and the ability to bring together communities in unprecedented ways, and the power of bringing these communities together so that individuals not only have voices, but they can exchange best practices, they can exchange insights, and they can exchange experiences all over the world. You've done this with the Muslim American community in the States. How have you seen your website that you created build community and extend your impact in ways you didn't expect?
I think, I am not an expert in social media by any means. In fact, when we launched the I Speak For Myself franchise just a few months ago, we really realized that we needed a lot of help. So those of you in the room, I certainly could use your expertise. I think what I've realized in my own work in terms of the impact that social media has, and I'll start with that, is that, I mean, we're always tuning into it at CNN. It's the way that I find sources. It's the way that my team gets people on the air during breaking news. You know, when news happens now, We're not looking for the Associated Press to like get on the ground and then finally file a wire story so that we can figure out who's there because CNN hasn't gotten there yet. Instantaneously, within 5 minutes of a story breaking or less, I'm able to get, you know, someone on the air. What the thing that I always tell my team is that you know, I don't believe in 5 degrees or 6 degrees of separation at all. And in my business, it's 1 degree. That's it. There's one person that connects me and my team at CNN to that person that we're trying to get. And our job is to find that person. And I think in terms of how that applies to you all, I mean, you can use that sort of you can use social media to develop that sort of networking capability in your own roles. I think, you know, it's a space where you have to kind of use your own filters, right? There's a lot of crap on social media. There's a lot of just buzz and things that you just really aren't, you know, but learning how to sort of clean some of that up for yourself, organize yourself within that is really important. And in terms of, you know, the impact I think we've had with I Speak for Myself, I'll give you, actually, I will let you in on something that we're developing. One of the things that came out of the launch of I Speak for Myself was a conversation that we had with Secretary Hillary Clinton's envoy to the Muslim world, Assistant Secretary Farah Pandith. We were at the State Department, a group of us from the book, and we really realized that one of the best and most significant things that we could do as Muslim American women, in addition to tell our stories in this book, is to really focus on Muslim women around the world and figure out how what we can do to sort of bridge that gap, right? Because it's not just perceptions by non-Muslim American individuals about my faith. It's actually Muslim women around the world who think that my American identity and my Muslim identity can't coexist. So we're launching, actually, hopefully next year, in conjunction with a nonprofit once we get the funding, an online initiative which will connect the 40 women from the book with 40 Muslim women from 40 different countries around the world. And so for the first time, what we're hopefully going to be able to do is really create that conversation that you all are seeing disparately across social media in one unified space. And I think even conferences like this are really impactful because you're all in one place. But imagine if all of you were in one place virtually and could keep that momentum and that conversation going online. And I think that truly is the benefit of social media.
The ability to bring together voices, and again, the power of connectivity, whether it be face-to-face like this or through virtual networks, to move a dialogue forward. Kyla, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how we can maybe impact greater change in our organizations. You talked about some of the dynamics of navigating that and being authentic. And having a senior leadership position, although it helps, doesn't mean you can't be an influencer. But so often, many of us feel unfulfilled in our lives. And I just read a statistic that we spend about one-third of our lives at work, which is pretty scary. But so many organizations and so many employees, I know, that's why the circles. That you see. That's why so many employees now see companies with a sense of purpose and a sense of mission and corporate giving. How can all of us work with our respective companies to help shape those social responsibility, those corporate responsibility efforts? How can we have a voice in that?
I think we're all challenged with time. Having a five-year-old son, I'm lucky if I can match when I leave the home every morning. So. And my home life is very important to me. But a third of our time is spent at work. I feel like three quarters of my time is spent at work.
Well, it's our mind, like especially our minds. It's never leaves us.
When I'm at work, that's exactly what I want to focus on. And I try and take part of my time and dedicate that to either some kind of community event or professional women's network or something that I feel passionate about and feel good about. And it doesn't cut into my home time. So this year was our first ever State Street Global Giving Campaign, the first ever charitable campaign that we ran around the world. And I helped to co-chair that. And it didn't take any of my personal time. It took an hour out of my week every single week from 9 to 10 o'clock in the morning. And then every lunch or every other lunch was to make sure that all of our different regions were engaged and knew exactly what we were doing. So it's just important for you to understand that you can give back of yourself to your community or to your company just by giving away a half an hour or an hour, and it doesn't have to cut into your life.
Which is a great point. I think all of us have a lot more tools and resources to do so. And when we talk about our values and what we're passionate about, and when we actually look at where we spend our time, often there's a huge disconnect. I was just doing a budgeting process, and you allocate resources. And I was like, why don't I do that in my life better? And you, there's creative ways to do that. And Governor Swift, I'll finish the last round of questions before we open it up to the audience. The other area which you mentioned before is becoming more active citizens. And I interviewed a woman the other day who said, I don't know how actually I can have a voice, how I can drive change. And we're all talking about some of the greatest problems in this country, and we're talking about the need for change. And how do you do that? By being the change. What advice would you give to women here today to start to more actively involve themselves in either conversations, communications at local levels, or even ultimately help support the rise of more women in political office?
So first of all, as women, we actually think we have to be completely prepared and know everything and have researched every issue in order to get involved in politics. And I mean, just watch CNN. That's clearly not the case. Men don't feel that way. So I think one of the things is that sort of lose that inhibition. It is hard to do something different. I think the most important thing to realize is that your views are valued, and I do actually regret how much discussion there is about how broken politics is, because in many ways it's only broken because good people don't run. And there are lots of very good people, some of whom you will vehemently disagree with, who put themselves and increasingly and unfortunately now their families in the public eye in order to tackle those issues. And one of the hardest things for me to express to people is, because at times my tenure in political office was tough. I mean, it's a full contact sport in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. It's not for the faint of heart. Probably the only worst job would be to be the manager of the Red Sox. And they didn't call me. And my husband would have told me to take that job. But the truth is that every day I got to do things that I cared about. And so even when you're in a rough and tumble arena and leadership can look like something that doesn't fit you, I do think that social media actually furthers this perception that we know what somebody else's life and work is like every single day. And I'm not sure that's really the truth. And there are so many really smart, really good people working in our public sector. And so if you don't take me up on the offer to run, find one of them who is and help them. And you really don't need a lot of specific skills. There's almost anything that you can do that will help them. I won my first race for the state Senate in part because my brother and all his friends who were in their 20s built yard signs in my dad's plumbing shop most evenings, drinking beer, I'm sure. Every member of my extended family, which is considerable, baked on Thursday nights, and every Friday we did a bake sale in front of my campaign office in Pittsfield. And we raised a ton of money, and I met a lot of people, and I actually figured out who in my family made the best pies and muffins and cakes.
I want to know who they are.
There are all kinds of things that you can do to help affect political change, and the thing that worries me the most is that because it can be such a brutal it can appear to be such a brutal venue at times that good, decent people who want to protect their families won't do it. And you all can change that. And I have tremendous respect for movements that seek to influence change from the outside, but we need to influence change from the inside of government too.
Can I just add to that, Moira? So every year there is a survey done of the number of the sort of the gender balance on Sunday political talk shows. How many of you watch Meet the Press or State of the Union, right? How many of you were disappointed to see three white guys on a panel every Sunday? Well, so am I. I mean, I'm vice chair of CNN's Diversity Council, and every year we go through this conversation. Maria, why are you guys not booking, you know, women? Well, what are Sunday political talk shows about? They're conversations with politicians, right? So if there aren't a significant number of female politicians that are impacting change, that are on Capitol Hill, the likelihood of us actually getting them to air is pretty slim. You know, and one of the things that, so it's not just about me and the media trying to meet my quota, right? I mean, we are trying to reflect what is actually out there. And I, you know, one of the best organizations that we've worked with was the White House Project. I mean, they do a lot of really good work championing, you know, women who want to be developed into political leaders. And so I would highly advocate that if you're interested, it's certainly an organization that we have worked with in the past and that I would certainly recommend to you all.
What's extraordinary is when you ask elected officials, female officials, did you choose to run by yourself or did someone ask you to run? The majority were asked to run and push by someone else because they didn't have the confidence to do so.
But there are studies that more often the people who get asked to run are men, which is why I never lose the opportunity to say I'm inviting each of you to run for political office.
There you go. You all have your invitations. Well, I wanted to thank you all because I think there's a number of different takeaways.